This is my presentation about, it's called Storytelling and Sorcerers. Thank you all for coming to hear me talk about esoteric weird stuff, because this is definitely going to be full of esoteric weird stuff. What I'm basically talking about is real-world magicians, like genuine real-world occultists and so on, that use real magic from fictional sources, primarily H.P. Lovecraft. Writers and magicians, there's a lot of overlap. Writers have often been magicians, magicians have often been writers. Things get very weird when writers start to take magic really seriously. Things get really weird, much weirder when magicians start to take fiction seriously. It gets very strange. I'm going to go back to the order that sort of began most of Western, pretty much is the one of the major sources of the Western occult tradition. It's the Golden Dawn. A cult order at the start of the 20th century or late 19th century. It included William Butler Yeats, who of course a Nobel Prize for Literature winner. Others like Martha Machen and Algernon Blackwood were writers who wrote a lot of very famous ghost stories. Charles Williams, I don't think, was actually a member of the Golden Dawn. He was a member of a successor order, the Holy Order of the Rose Cross or something like that. Charles Williams was essentially the third writer in the Inklings. So after Tolkien, Lewis, the major writer was Charles Williams. He's not really well known now. If you think of him as writing less like Tolkien but more like a sort of Victorian Tim Powers, you're probably on the money. And so he was a great writer. There's rumours about Bram Stoker. Haven't been able to track those down. Ian Nesbitt, whose real name was Edith something, not Nesbitt, that I can't remember offhand, was allegedly a member of one of these orders, though, as well. There are a lot of writers were involved in occult organisations, particularly these ones. I'm excluding, by the way, the other major stream of Western tradition would be witchcraft, which I'll touch on only very lightly. There's no doubt many, many authors who are witches or Wiccans, and I didn't do that. This is the Golden Dawn also included like Aleister Crowley, who is pretty much the most apart from possibly Gerald Gardner, who sort of started Wicca as a more open, legitimate tradition. Aleister Crowley is almost certainly the most influential occult figure of the 20th century. He later founded the Ordo Templi Orientis, which is a cult order that will get mentioned many times in this presentation in passing, and of which I might point out I don't make a member. So. There are many offshoots, divisions, arguments. That chap we just saw before, that is actually William Butler Yeats. That chap is Samuel Liddell MacGregor Mathers, the head of the Golden Dawn. In full Egyptian magical regalia. So this is what the Golden Dawn were like. There was a lot of dressing up. There was a lot of stuff. Being in the Golden Dawn takes an awful lot. To build a Golden Dawn temple requires, you've got to have like a dozen ritual implements, all of which must be separately sanctified in a particular ritual, and you must have every one of the dozen officers in any given ritual has their own special robes and their own special wand. It's a very complicated, time-consuming tradition, but of which many authors and so on were a part. People who are known primarily as magicians, of course, were also writers. Aleister Crowley wrote quite a lot of poetry, much of it pornographic, which goes by titles like White Stains or Snowdrops from a Curate's Garden and things like that. The fact that it's pornographic usually isn't that obvious, but he's pretty single-minded. He also wrote a novel called Moonchild, which is a fictionalised account of various magical battles and things he had in the Simon Ives stories, which are sort of magical detective stories. Dion Fortune was in the successor order to the Golden Dawn, the Stella Matutina, Order of the Silver Star or something, wrote many occult-themed novels, or many of which have thinly veiled attacks on various of her occult contemporaries. She in particular believed that she was involved in what she called the Magical Battle for Britain, which is a magical, big magical work that they did to try and beat the Nazis, and wrote that into some of her novels as well.
Can I make a small request?
Yeah.
Can you move the mouse pointer one side of the other? It's really glaring to me. So, thanks.
so. Modern day writers, the two that really fascinate me are Alan Moore and Grant Morrison, who are both really well known comics writers and are both very open about their magical involvement. There's probably plenty more, but those are the two that spring to mind. That's Alan Moore in Hook's Finery. That's in fact Alan Moore on his wedding day. He got married in that beautiful bottle green coat and turquoise. In full Edwardian dandy style. A practicing magician, very open about it, has done many interviews about his magical things. He's writing a grimoire in comic book form, which I'm very much looking forward to, as you do all. Includes pop-up sections, apparently. magical themes show up in a lot of his work, but particularly in Promethea. Reading Promethea, I've pretty much said, like, if you want an introduction to Western magical tradition, yeah, just read Promethea, and it's probably better than reading the sort of very dry and dusty books, because in comic book form, all the sort of, like, the colours and the associations are much, you know, get stuck in your head a lot. Grant Morrison, heavily influenced by his Chaos Magic experience, writing his series The Invisibles, which is probably not his best-selling work, because he's done a lot of work on really well-known titles like Justice League of America and so on, but The Invisibles was probably the classic Grant Morrison doing his thing work. Very long series, which is essentially about a cell of anarchist chaos magicians fighting a evil occult conspiracy essentially run by Gnostic demons. Very in particular, about issue 5 or 6 of his comic, The Invisibles, the comic was starting to go into a bit of a sales decline, and there was some doubt about whether it would go ahead. So he published in the letters column, he said, look, we're having a bit of trouble with the sales need to go up. To encourage this, I'd like you all to participate with me in a mighty magical work. He published a sigil. I was able to find my issue of the comic and republish the sigil, but a magical sigil that he created to empower heightened sales for his comic. And he told all his readers, at this particular time and this particular date, you should charge the sigil with power with me. There are a number of ways in which you can charge the sigil, but sex is particularly good, and let's face it, for most of you that means masturbation. So he basically encouraged his readers to all wank with him in unison over his magical sigil, so that...
At least he was open and honest.
He's very open and honest. This is all in the letter column, and it worked! You know, the sales went up. The comic, that was about issue 5 or 6. The comic went on to go for about a 60-odd issue run. Which was, you know, we concluded when it should, went to its appropriate conclusion. So his famous wankathon sigil magic did seem to work as far as we can tell. He's also written a play about Aleister Crowley, which was performed at a Scottish arts festival, and the actors sort of rebelled when they realised that he'd managed to work a full magical ritual into the play. They weren't really sure, but I think they eventually went ahead when he assured them that they weren't summoning demons. So back onto fiction becoming magic. This is the most obvious example. This symbol here, the 8-pointed star of chaos. It was created by Michael Moorcock for the Elric books. But there are earlier versions of an 8-pointed star, but specifically with the 8 arrows going out, it seems to be a symbol he invented. He certainly associated with the power of chaos. And it's used as a symbol by chaos magicians. Crap, I forgot to get all my books from my room that I was going to hand out to hand around. Old bugger.
Do you want me to
get them? That would be really complicated. Peter Carroll is a famous chaos magician who wrote a bunch of books, pretty much founded the modern sort of chaos magic tradition, which is very influential in modern occult circles. I mean, a lot of people don't like it, but everyone has an opinion, which is for or against. Peter Carroll invented a 3D version. If you can imagine, like, the 8 stars going out to the 8 corners of a cube, and then you've got this sort of 8-pointed, 3-dimensional star thing. is a big symbol. It's used by lots of black metal bands and Warhammer 40k fans and things like that. But in particular, it really is used by modern chaos magicians. And I've seen, you know, my occult circle friends sporting their 8-pointed star things. And no, I'm not sure all of them actually know that it was just invented by Michael Moorcock in the 80s. Or 70s. Now, Matt, Lovecraft is where it gets really cool. H.P. Lovecraft is very influential in magic circles. I'm not really sure why. Is it, I mean, this idea of cosmic horror is pretty much a Lovecraft invention. The idea of a work of horror fiction which gets its power from the idea that there is, you know, you are part of a vast, uncaring cosmos full of horrible things and you are just an insignificant mote is pretty much a Lovecraftian invention. And that does seem, just the fact that it's a unique idea means that he's influential for a start, but also it does seem to resonate with a lot of magical themes, a lot of which is about, you know, your place in the universe. Particularly, here's a sort of a version of demonology and so on that is both, you know, it has all the characteristics of traditional demonology. These things are, you know, hideous and monstrous and can help you or hurt you and don't have your best interests at heart, but still rooted in a scientific sort of worldview. It's not an entirely medieval, you know, it's demonology without having to hook into a purely medieval sort of worldview. He's got depictions of some sort of shamanic magic in a lot of his work. There's a lot of, you know, orgiastic hollering. And, I don't know why he's so big, but for whatever reason, he is.
There's a reason that in the writing that he just described, at least had recorded and transcribed, the prior VR is straight from the classical Linda's Rice.
So how much occult knowledge do you have? At the point of writing The Horror of Red Hook, this is one of his early novels, his occult knowledge was very poor. He'd essentially cribbed it all from the Encyclopedia Britannica entry on magic. he has a list of terrible demon names, which are mostly names of God. So Tetragrammaton means the name that is spelt with four letters. Yehovah. Adonai means the Lord. Having a bit of a brain fart, I've forgotten exactly what AGLA stands for. It's an acronym for Most Holy Lord or something. He was very embarrassed when he realised how crappy a job he'd done, and he sort of set out to rectify it. There's letters where he sent to a few of his friends where he said, I was very embarrassed about all of this. So he needs to fix it. So he did read a few books. He read Black Magic by Arthur Waite. Arthur Waite is a member of the Golden Dawn, very famous because he wrote a lot of books. Also kind of notorious. It's a bit of an interesting counterpoint to Aleister Crowley, who accordingly hated him. They've both been quite interventional. The two biggest tarot decks were most in use by sort of people in the Western tradition would be either the Aleister Crowley's Thoth deck or the single most common tarot deck is the Rider-Waite deck, where Waite did the tarot work and Rider did the art. Also different in that while Aleister Crowley is notorious for being a wicked, wicked man, Arthur Edward Waite is notorious for being excruciatingly dull. books are quite hard to read. There's some pretty savage satires by Crowley on him as well. He also wrote a book on magic by Sax Rohmer. Apparently Sax Rohmer was a practicing magician. Sax Rohmer, for those of you who... The name doesn't immediately spring to mind, because I wrote the Fu Manchu stories, which aren't really read much, partly on account of them not very good, and partly on account of them being amazingly racist, but were very influential at the time. Fu Manchu was the... Fuck off! Fu Manchu was the... the Yellow Peril, the evil Chinaman, Chinese scheming demon. Heroes of the Golden Bough by Joseph Fraser, The Witch Cast in Western Europe by Murray, the writings of Cotton Mather, who was an outraged colonial, a Puritan-era preacher in the US who wrote about all the terrible things that happened there. Witches. But he's definitely not an expert, and he's certainly an atheist and not a magician himself. So the fact that all magicians are picking him up is odd. Yes, I am indeed an absolute materialist as far as actual belief goes, with not a shred of credence in any form of supernaturalism, Lovecraft and Clark Christensen, in 1925. He did often refer to fictional books of magical lore or obscure real books, and some of them were just in jokes. Colsey's Des Ghouls, which is a book that crops up in Lovecraft stories and in Lovecraft sort of sources a bit of time, is said to be written by the Comte Derlet, which of course is a reference to August Derlet, who was a friend, fellow horror writer and a good friend of his. The Book of Ibon was a lift straight from Clark Ashton Smith's Aberonia stories, where it turns up for the first time, and then he reused that name of a fictional book in his stories. The Vermis Mysteries, The Mystery of the Worms, but it was from stories by Robert Bloch, the guy who later wrote Psycho, who's the young upcoming kid in the Lovecraft circle, pretty much. All of these mentioned Lovecraft. So all these authors, they had I don't think they've had a formal name for it, but they had a circle of horror writers who spent a lot of their time writing letters to each other and critiquing each other's stories and were fans of each other's work, and they tossed these in-jokes around all the time. Robert Howard in Conan stories is another one. The Book of Zian is an interesting one, just because it's another one often mentioned alongside these other fictional books, but it's actually a real book. It was dictated to Helena Blavatsky of the Theosophical Society by astral entities. Bears a substantial resemblance to the Rig Veda. The Rig Veda is a major Hindu holy book. The Necronomicon is his favourite book, most often used in his stories as a grimoire. A lot of the others, they're written about and they contain terrible things, but only the Necronomicon does he really mention as containing actual spells and actual magic that you can cast. The title is very bad Greek, in that people are still arguing about exactly what it should mean. Came to Lovecraft in a dream. So, you know, that's why it's bad Greek, apparently. It's written by Abdul Al-Hazred, who is a childhood invention of Lovecraft. He wrote these little kids' stories about Abdul Al-Hazred when he was a teenager and so on, whose name was very bad Arabic, because no Arab is actually called Abdul. It's an anglicisation of Abdul. And if it was an anglicisation of Abdul, then you wouldn't have another Al straight after it. So, yeah, Abdul Hazred is closest you'd actually get in Arabic. So,
which literally means slave, Hazred.
Yeah. Yes. So. And the Necronomicon used by several authors, but Robert Howard is a classic one. I mentioned it, not in the Conan stories, but some of his other stories. He's written not a reasonable number of Lovecraft stories. The history of the Necronomicon, according to Lovecraft, because he wrote a history of the Necronomicon, which he then shared with his friends, so they could all be working from the same page, which essentially said it was originally Al-Azif in Arabic in about 700 AD, which is a reference, the title name Al-Azif is a reference to the noise made by insects, basically, I think. The author was devoured by invisible demons in the streets of Damascus, I think. And then he said it was translated into Greek by Theodore Pilavatus, a Byzantine, in 950 AD. Translated into Latin by Olaus Wormius in 1228. Then banned by Pope Gregory IX in 1232, shortly afterwards. It's like, oh, now that we can read it, it's horrible. And then translated into English by John Dee, who was the court astrologer, among other things, was the court astrologer to Queen Elizabeth I. Also a very important man, and I could do a whole presentation on how awesome John Dee is. I love this man. He's got a fantastic beard, and he was a court astrologer, and actually quite important. The lines between magic and science and so on were a lot more blurred in the Elizabethan era. So in fact, a lot of the things he learned through being a magician, things like cryptography, which was used in early Elizabethan espionage, and in fact he was also a very good mathematician, which became crucial for navigation, which of course was how the English ruled the waves. Also the man who invented the concept of the British Empire. Anyway. So the idea that it was translated into English by John Dee was an invention of Frank Belknap Long. Dee will come up later, by the way, I was just ranting. There's another one. Frank Belknap Long is another one. But it must be real. People had to believe in the Necronomicon. It'd been mentioned so many times and all these books had referred to it. It must be a real book. And so it was, several times. The first fake Necronomicon was written by L. Sprague de Camp, Al-Azif. It was a mock Arabic script. It's not really translatable. It just sort of looked like Arabic. He had a long explanation of how he'd acquired it on a trip to Iraq, which I believe had actually gone on. And then, someone had slipped in this manuscript and he got it back through customs. And it's very repetitive. Some pages are repeated up to 8 times. It looks like that. So there's a book he did actually publish. It was about, I think, 24 pages long or something. Not very long at all. But he actually published it, made a bit of money out of it, and it's full of this. Blah, blah, blah. And in fact, some pages are repeated either repeated wholesale or repeated with like one word changed or something many times. So it's pages and pages of this essentially pseudo-Arabic gibberish. H.I. Geiger wrote a Necronomicon, but to him it was just a nice title for a nifty book. He was well aware it was fictional, but he did make a book and several sequels, and they had very Necronomicon-y sort of art. That picture there, in fact, is while that's obviously H.I. Geiger art, that picture is very clearly a lift from the picture of Baphomet in Eliphas Levi's History of Magic, which is a very influential picture, well known to. Certainly well known to anyone in the sort of Crowley-ish, Golden Dawn-y tradition, I would think. Hand up to heaven and one down below. It's hermaphroditic and various other important things. The Simon Necronomicon is the most famous hoax Necronomicon. And still is a regular seller. It used to be you could go down to Borders and there'd be a little section. Borders have a section on, spirituality, and then they have a section on, alternate believe something, and have a little section on the occult, and then within that occult section there's a little section about this big that said black magic, which I thought was fantastic, because you could go to Borders and go into the black magic section and go, "Oh, never summon demon," which would have Waite's book and this one, and it would usually have a copy of the Simon Necronomicon. It's still a regular study. Almost all of it is Sumerian material taken from the well-known translations at the time, with a few of the names changed, a bit of a framing narrative about how they came to got it, and and a lot of it just sort of garbled and mixed around a bit. Almost certainly lifted from known Sumerian translations, because it'll be like their lists where the only thing that's different is the names and things like that. Allegedly, according to the material in the book, it was obtained from real monks who had stolen a number of ancient documents. So the monks there were actually a bunch of monks in New York who had gone around and stolen a huge number of antique documents and then got busted and went to jail. The books, though, that they had stolen, I mean, the monks weren't out for uncover occult knowledge, they were out for money, so they had mostly stolen Bibles and things like medieval Bibles and things like that that could be reselled on the antique book market for good money. Because they wanted to make money. They were evil monks. They were bad monks. Lily, could, if you've finished your dinner, could I ask you to go to my room and find every occult looking book you can find?
Not the video.
I haven't, but I can do that.
Oh, well, you can finish your lunch, I know, Harry, before the end. It is definitely believed to be true by many Satanists, including some who have killed people based on beliefs in based on rituals in the book. I take this as largely because Satanists are retarded, but also I believe by many anti-Satanism campaigners, because of course it's been found that the Satanists, so it must be real, which says the same thing about anti-Satanism campaigners. There's definitely a lot of people still claim that it's a workable magic system and would believe you can do rituals from it. There's lots of theories about its creation, including probably Anton LaVey, who's the founder of the Church of Satan. Author is unknown, but most likely a guy named Peter Lavendra did most of the work, and a bunch of others who people hung out at the Magical Child occult store, which was pretty much the centre of the occult community in New York at the time. Some people have confessed their part in the hoax, but Simon, the pseudonymous author, has written a defence of the book, claiming that definitely it's authentic and all these allegations. Just rubbish.
So when you talk about at the time, what time are we talking about?
I think we're talking around the 50s, yeah. The next is Necronomicon. George Hay, I think, was the editor, allegedly a deciphering of John Dee's Liber Nogaeth, a book. There's a lot of magical books written by John Dee. Most of them were he worked with a person who scribed, who was a scryer. So he worked with a guy named Edward Kelly. He'd stare into a crystal and go into a bit of a trance, and then he would talk to angels, and Dee would talk to Kelly via the angels. And most of the books were dictated by angels.
Angels.
I could go on and on about Dee and Kelly for a long time. It's a very entertaining subject, particularly the time when the angels told them to swap wives. and there's also the time when Kelly kept complaining that the angels, instead of just talking to him, they were spelling the words out letter at a time, and that's because they knew Kelly didn't speak Greek, and they were talking to Dee and telling him not to trust Kelly. extensive involvement by the occultist Colin Wilson in this one. Colin Wilson's got a number of books about the occult, so he's really quite well, and some fiction about the occult, so he's pretty well known. As well as the George Hay, obviously. The computer deciphering work was done by a computer expert named David Langford. Now, those of you who've been involved in fandom a long time, like Peter, David Langford, yes. David Langford is the author of The Ansible, the best-known single science fiction fanzine. He's been the best fan writer, Hugo, for about 20 years. He's got more Hugos than anyone alive. And he's definitely a man with a sense of humour. In particular, there's a book of his parodies out called The Dragon's Hiker's Guide to Dune's Edge Odyssey 2. So the involvement of David Langford in that would be raising some eyebrows. But they've now officially admitted that it's a hoax.
I used to own that book, I think.
I do, in fact, own it. And this is what they were working from. This is Dee's Liber Nogaeth. It's essentially a book just full of these tables, full of stuff. The writing is not in English, it's in Enochian, the angelic language that the angels taught Dee. It's not writing, it's just a table for... It's not words. That was Langford's assumption. There's a long description by Dave Langford about how he went about deciphering the table. Of course, it's all kind of lies. But he talks about how he could have deciphered the table, a plausible method for deciphering the table, and then just produces some stuff at the end. I did that. In fact, I think he does explain how he manages to get all the pictures out of the table, which is a bit of a...
The pictures in the contract.
It's a, the actual what you what it is once it's decoded. It's a relatively conventional grimoire of magic. So Wilson confessed it a hoax officially in the pages of some magazine. Dave Langford is a coy, but definitely amused. He's a lot of people over there. Look, it's the Necronomicon. I dare not speak of its terrible content. They made up this whole interesting fake background for how Lovecraft's father became an occult. How Lovecraft's father was an occult Egyptian Freemason, and this was how he got the book. And then he would have it around the house when Lovecraft was young, and so he heard about it and knew that it was this terrible thing. And then that, you know, just surfaced in his fiction later. And it was all lies. It was interesting lies. This is an example of the book. That one. That's the Ye Seal of Yog-Sothoth, and you know these amazing diagrams of how things should look. This is their example of Ye Elder Sign. The fact that they used Ye, by the way, is a really, really dead giveaway in that Ye is not a real word. It's a mistranslation of a letter that we don't have in English anymore, which is a letter that essentially means should for TH, so when they say Ye, it actually is the. And there were a lot of these in there, which were not a mistake. But yeah, not a mistake that D would have made at the time, him being a terribly, terribly educated man, one of the most educated men in Europe. There's a book called Das Necronomicon. Crazy books have arrived. My copy of the Hay Necronomicon is still down in my room somewhere, but off. This German book is the Simon Necronomicon, plus some parts of the Goetia, with Goetia is a famous work of demon summoning, translated into German. So basically it's just a couple of famous occult books jammed together, translated into German. The claim was from the papers of Gregor Gregorius, real name Eugene Grosch, the head of the Fraternitas Saturni, pre-Aleister Crowley ITO breakaway group. The only thing interesting about this is if their story about it being from the papers of Gregor Gregorius are real, then it means real occultists were taking the Simon Necronomicon, which we've just discussed was a fake, just made up of Sumerian sources with the name slightly scratched off. They were treating it on an equal basis with things like the Goetia, which is a very genuine medieval grimoire. There's the Elizabeth Ann St. George Necronomicon. This is an interesting fake written by, presumably, Elizabeth Ann St. George, who is a sort of a trained ceremonial magician, but who runs her own psychic investigation firm, Spook Enterprises. He may be a real trained magician, but definitely has an eye for how to make money out of it. In her version, the author is Al-Rashid of Sophis. Sophis is a nickname, is a name for Sirius, and is probably a sort of joke because the Sirius as Sophis features in a lot of occult view. Some notable occult books at the time, current at the time. Many references to Islam, mixes simple health and agricultural tricks in with the magic, which is actually very realistic. A lot of the lines between what was magic and science and stuff were very blurred back then. Many references to Islam is interesting. I mean, mostly it's supposed to be a rare, but usually it's a pre-Islamic. Merlin Stone's Necronomicon is another fake, but with bits and pieces from all over the place. The Simon Necronomicon, Satanic Sources, makes very odd claims about the where the books came from and what you do with the magic and all stuff. Very small press, there's probably, you know, a few dozen copies of that around. The Lynn Carter Necronomicon. Lynn Carter was another contemporary of Lovecraft. I don't think a particularly friend of Lovecraft, but certainly part of the Weird Tales scene, those sort of group of writers. Their Necronomicon is mostly a collection of stories by Carter, fictional effort, mixed in a lot of other bits and pieces from written by the other authors, though. Lynn Carter's stories are pretty bad fiction. Lynn Carter is not a good writer.
He tried to carry on the Conan series for a while, but most people who read Conan
he's quite important historically as an editor, because he edited lots of things around the time, but his actual work is pretty dreadful, and lifted on the Hay Necronomicon anyway. The Robert Price Necronomicon is actually a book that's worth getting. This is a collection of stories and essays about the Necronomicon from Chaosium. Repeats the Linkarda Necronomicon, the Sussex manuscript, which is an early attempt at a fictional Necronomicon, some other useful things, critical essays.
The Reverend Robert Price, mind you.
Yes.
And he teaches biblical criticism.
Yeah. So he knows what he's on about. So. There's a couple of strange Italian variant Necronomicons. One which seems to be a mixture of Lovecraft and Crowley stuff by Frank Rippel, Italian head of the Ordo Rosae Mysticae, which I don't I don't know anything much about other than the name suggests to me it fits in the same lineage of the Crowley and Golden Dawn sort of game. Magical orders are constantly getting outraged about the terrible, heinous things done by their order and splitting off into new orders. It's just it's the natural way of things. And always give themselves charming titles like this one. Later claims the book was derived from a more ancient, lost Atlantean book, which is good. There's another Necronomicon, supposedly from a copy in the Vatican Library, but, you know, seems to look like Lovecraft. People just like to dress these books up with very authentic versions to make hope that will sell them more. Another Italian one, essentially an Italian reprint of the Hay book with some extra material from the Simon book. And some supplementary material. But this is the best bit. The sequel will contain material recovered from the tomb of Al-Hazred.
What, the guy who was eaten by a little monster?
Yes, the guy who was eaten by... There's not much of him left, but he won't count too. And the last one I've seen, pretty recent, came out last year, is the Tyson Necronomicon. Donald Tyson himself is definitely a noted occult author. In particular, has written some pretty good books on John Dee's Enochian magic. Also translated and edited an edition of Agrippa's three books of occult philosophy. So he's a serious occultist, really knows what he's talking about. But this book, his Necronomicon, appears to be just a book of his fiction. He has previously said all Necronomicons are fake and just for fun, so we should assume that applies to his one as well. But that's enough Necronomicons. So what about the real magic? This is where it gets this is where the crazy starts. Kenneth Grant is the head of a breakaway from the Ordo Templi Orientis. His breakaway group is usually referred to as the Typhonian OTO. There's enough different OTOs that you need special naming conventions to keep track of all of them, because several of them claim to be the one true genuine OTO, so they won't refer to the others. They won't refer to themselves as anything other than the OTO, but his group is normally referred to the Typhonian OTO. He was essentially Crowley's secretary in the late years of his life and claimed that he had been given the spiritual successorhood of the order. The major OTO, usually referred to by its... those who dislike it as the Caliphate OTO, is based in the US, has branches in many, many countries all over the world, has about, particularly has independent sort of sub kings, they're called 10th degree heads in Australia and the UK. Has thousands of people worldwide. It's quite a big organisation, whereas the Typhonian OTO is, we think, down to about a few dozen at the moment. And will probably cease to exist once Kenneth Grant dies and he's in 80s or something. He often mentions Lovecraft in his work. He has very odd beliefs about Crowley that aren't really shared by anybody else, including close contact by aliens. He does a lot of sex magic based on vaginal secretions, which are called colours in his work, which is distinct from Crowley in that Crowley does a lot of sex magic where he cares a lot more about semen. This guy, he has written, I'm missing a slide, which is really sad, because I was going to talk about I scanned the picture and discovered only today I'd scanned it a little bit sideways, so I'm missing a slide, but there's the Tree of Life, this is the traditional arrangement of the Kabbalah, the Jewish mystical, premier Jewish mystical system, tends to divide the universe into these 10... the universe is structured. This is essentially physical reality. This is the world of the subconscious, the world of the emotions, the world of sort of words and logic. Right up to this is sort of essentially the pure divine nature. In the traditional Hebrew version, there's these 10 things which are called the Sefirot, or essentially containers, to me, and the and then the Hebrew letters are all assigned to these things between them. Generally, this gets, in modern occult practice, this gets turned into a much more complicated diagram where each of these things will also have these tarot cards assigned to each of these paths, the names of God, angels, you know, particular colours. It gets terribly complicated. And what I was going to show you in the next slide, which is sadly empty, is that then it's a magical concept of the evil versions of all of these. There's an idea that these are sort of the vessels which were filled with God's divine energy, but then they shattered and the broken, they shattered, the goodness ran onto the next container, but the shattered shells behind are sort of evil anti-versions. It's a complicated way of explaining it. Anyway, Grant talks a lot about these evil anti-versions, and essentially, whereas different gods will be assigned to each of these in the standard system, so, for example, Venus is usually put on that sphere, Mercury there, Mars there, Jupiter there. In the evil anti-version, he has often does work with assigning the Lovecraftian great old ones to the various tip-off. So that's pretty much with Kenneth Grant. He has also said that the Necronomicon, while he knows, of course, that it was made up by Crowley, by Lovecraft, while he knows it was made up by Lovecraft, he believes that it might exist as an Akashic record in the collective unconscious, that Lovecraft and others made contact with this book that was out there floating in the subjective unconscious. So the stuff that, while they may have made it up, it may be fiction, it may at the same time be real, because this book was leaking out through the collective subconscious. That theory sounds pretty crazy, but in fact that is the exact way by which Helena Blavatsky claimed she wrote the Book of Zion. She said that it was this book that was out there in the Akashic record, which is sort of the level of reality on which all your past lives and things are written down, and that she was getting things from the Akashic. And she wrote the Book of Zion because she was able to get there in sort of full consciousness, she could just transcribe the book out from it. Or he also has suggested that possibly Lovecraft read Al-Azif in a previous incarnation, which obviously was a very bad incarnation, which meant he was a bad man who's been punished for it now by having nightmares, which Lovecraft had for his whole life. The Satanists were into Lovecraft as well. Anton LaVey, founder of the Church of Satan, was a big Lovecraft fan, and as it happens, a friend of Clark Ashton Smith. He asked Michael Aquino to create some Lovecraftian rituals for him. Michael Aquino is pretty well known. He was the guy who eventually went on to found a breakaway order of the Temple of the Church of Satan. Anton LaVey was a bit too much into theatrics and a bit too much into Satan as the anti-Christian god. And Aquino said, no, we've got to make a less anti-Christian version of Satan. We can't be defined by our enemies. And founded the Temple of Set. Particular of these rituals is the ceremony of the nine angles, which involves Yog-Sothoth, Ad-Sothoth, Yom-Sothoth, Shub-Niggurath. Uses a trapezoid. The trapezoid gets used in satanic ritual a bit, is this idea that strange shapes are unsettling and put you into a different mindset. It also links into Lovecraft, because Lovecraft wrote stories like The Haunter of the Dark, which had the shining trapezohedron. Which was some sort of mystic artifact that you could use to contact Nyarlathotep in his form as the Haunter of the Dark, and it's three bats with three lobed eyes, if I'm remembering correctly.
And it suggests non-Euclidean geometry.
Yes, and it suggests non-Euclidean geometry. So. And it was the Call of Cthulhu ritual, which is sort of like a watery version of the above, because it's the third ritual, which isn't explicitly a Lovecraftian, but certainly seems to be, certainly reminds you of it. As die elektrischen Vorspieler, my attempt to pronounce German in any way resembles the actual language, allegedly from a black order that inspired Nazi occultism, but not really, they appear to have just made that up. But it's such a great ritual. It has white noise, strong electric fields, and a pentagram made of neon tubes. Yeah! Now, and trapezohedrons, and it talks about the hounds of the barrier, which is the hounds from outside time may be attracted by this ritual.
Who wrote the Kanaki books?
William Pope Hodgson, is it? Possibly.
Might be, because there was a, they had a pentagram of Neon-Shubi.
Yes, the pentagram of Neon-Shubi was in the Carnacki books. That's, you're quite correct. This is a Voodoo Gnosticism. This is a book of the Voodoo Gnostic workbook by a guy called Michael Bertio. It's part of an organisation called the Ordo Templi Orientis Antiqua. Essentially another pre-Crowley breakaway from the OTO, but is now united with the officially has McKiston made up with the Caliphate OTO. Grant Morrison's favourite book. So you know how crazy Grant Morrison is. Just think this is what he finds inspiringly crazy. Amazing mixture of weird voodoo stuff, including voodoo stuff I haven't really found much reference to in other voodoo books, like the Insect Lower and stuff like that. A lot of Crowley, a lot of Gnosticism, Shinto, every damn thing. And of course, plenty of Lovecraft. He has this system called Voodootronics, which is essentially about grabbing bits of any sort of occult or religious system you can and cramming it into his voodoo-based magical system. This guy, Michael Bertio, he was an Anglican, I think, originally, but then he went to, and he was a social worker in Chicago's Haitian community, and then he went to Haiti for a while, and while he was there, became both initiated as a voodoo sorcerer, a Bakor, and also made a bishop of one of the obscure breakaway Catholic groups that doesn't acknowledge the Pope, the Martinists, I think, and continued and both sort of unified these two things in his mind, and then later on grabbed whatever else he could find, and then started to just basically go hog wild with every bit of magic system he came across. He's getting to be quite old now, but I really wish, I can't find my copy of the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook. Understand what I, knowing who I am and, you know, the sort of things I'm into, understand that this is by far and away the craziest book I own. This is just an awesome, awesome book of raving craziness. Lovecraft is one more thing stirred into his system that takes on everything. And apparently they did practice aquatic sex magic rituals designed to contact the deep ones. They're wonderful books. These great things where he sort of give the traditional sort of magic things where, you know, there'll be correspondences between this and that and the other, and you know, other people's tables of correspondences, old fashioned sort of, and they're sure, you know, and this corresponds to, you know, gold and this to mercury and this to, and his will be like, and this corresponds to uranium and the planets of your Pluto and your alright. Another group is the Esoteric Order of Dagon. They were a sort of spin-off from Kenneth Grant's group. They published some rituals, but it seems like they did a few rituals, but they seem to have mostly made them up and been more into study. They have made it really good, some great. And it's unclear whether they did their rituals and just lost interest, or whether they just wrote them up and never really did them themselves. But they have things like a ritual with you have a ritual communion with Cthulhu using a chalice of salt water, elder signs as vanishing pentagrams, so just sort of simply grafting bits of the Cthulhu-ish stuff into more traditional stuff, because vanishing pentagrams are vanishing pentagrams is like the, it's the first thing every junior, ceremonial magician learns, is that vanishing pentagrams are every day. This is the craziest bit of all, the Miskatonic Alchemical Expedition. A guy named Bill Siebert got basically expelled from Grant's Typhonian OTO. So he got expelled from the crazy guys, so he formed his extra crazy group, the Comic and he was also a director of the Esoteric Order of Dagon. It's not clear whether they did their rituals, but he certainly did. He goes with an Ashta Chozar Saratu, which I have no idea why he insists on that particular capitalisation. I'm sure it's very important. He co-founded the Map of the Crystal Hum, a power zone ritual space in 23 acres of farmland, where he and his fellow could get together and do sex and drug rituals. They drink the entheogenic elixir, which contained a mixture of psilocybin, Chambord, raspberry, or sometimes cannabis, liquid LSD, and or human sexual fluids. I think we've just found the world's most disturbing cocktail. According to Siebert, one might experience things like sexual union with Cthulhu. I have no idea why anyone would want to achieve sexual union in Cthulhu. I might say why anyone in their right mind, but obviously after drinking the Indian Council. The bank foreclosed in 1988, so don't seem to have done much. There's things like the Temple of the Vampire, a vampiric religious group that revered Tiamat, and other entries from the Simon Necronomicon. A pretty influential net magician, instant net magician, Tyagi Nagasiva, is very into the idea of Necronomicon as a terma, which is an idea that the world's not ready for the book, so it sits out there in the ether, and eventually the astral powers will decide the world is ready for it and allow it to be written. And the Tibetan Book of Dead was famously a terma. It was sat around in the astral for a long time before it was allowed to be written down. For example, he wrote a paper called Cthulhu Magic, Lovecrafting the Roles of Modern Occultism. That kind of spelling is pretty much, it's a very big in some roles of, some bits of chaos magic sort of world, particularly comes from Genesis P. Orridge's Temple of Psychic Youth. Which is essentially, just mentioning Doreen Valiente, because she's a famous in the witchcraft world, she eventually actually came up with the terma theory first, is very interested in Lovecraft, and probably would have a lot to teach sort of modern Wicca, but didn't really grab onto him. Phil Hine is one of my favourites, and one of Grant Morrison's favourites as well, leading modern chaos magician. He has a book called The Pseudonomicon, which I have here, which is his little book of Lovecraftian magic, includes the Feast of the Ghouls, right? Which is essentially you'd sort of destroy your consciousness by behaving in gross, atavistic, animalistic ways. Has written, for example, other rituals involving Harpo Marx as an incarnation of Harpocrates, the god of silence, and things like that. He's pretty cool. And the final mention, I'm just going to say, there's at least one example that we know of a guy named Phil Ferrell, 17-year-old murderer and head of a teen vampire cult, killed his girlfriend's parents, is obsessed with the Simon Necronomicon and wanted to carry out its rituals, even though lots of them involve killing an awful lot of people. So, the idea that, that's pretty much all I have. Recommended reading, if you are interested in fake Necronomicons, is the Necronomicon Files by Daniel Harms and John Winston Gonsi III. That has a lot more stuff, particularly about the Simon Necronomicon, which they alternate between hating because it's a dubious fake and hating because it's a very, very dangerous, irresponsible magic, which seems a little bit of a contradiction, but they seem to manage to keep the hate up despite it. That's a very interesting book, which has a lot of other stuff, including stuff about Lovecraftian movies and things like that, and other Necronomicon-related books I didn't mention. That's about it. Any questions?
I've got a question, but the character as well as looking at the Necronomicon version, it also looks like the book of Ivan, which is based on Clark Ashton Smith's writing.
Yes.
And half of that is rituals that they're written up especially for the book, if anybody wants to use them.
Right. Thank you. I'm indebted for that. If anyone wants to take a look at a couple of things, Phil Hine's book. I've got a copy of the Hay Necronomicon back in my room if anyone wants to check that out. Thank you all for attending.